Hearing the learner refers to the fact that we were actually listening to what the learners were telling us through our interviews, the observations in the classroom, and some of the teaching materials that we observed. So in this session, I wanted to talk to you about the experience of learners with learning English before they came to Australia, and in particular, I was interested to know what they are learning about reading and writing. And this came about because early in the interviews, I was hearing quite often from the students themselves that they were better at reading and writing. They felt more confident with reading and writing. And I wondered why that was the case. I mean, we do know for some reason why that is the case, but I actually wanted to know exactly what kind of skills in reading and writing they thought they had developed and why they felt that reading and writing was an easier, in the sense, a skill to acquire. Because we know that literacy is in fact not easy, and that in fact maybe their preconceptions of literacy in the Australian community might be different to their experience of literacy in their own country. So I'm looking at the experiences of their language learning and what they thought about their English literacy skills, how they use it in the community, how this fits with the instruction given on reading and writing in the AMEP. And finally, we might have, if it doesn't make you late for lunch, we might have a quick chat about what does this mean actually for our future programs. So the data I was looking at came from the interviews, as I said. Most of it was the result of our conversations with the students about their language learning and about their language use in the community. Also, some observations we did at classrooms as students were learning in the classroom and how they approached their learning. We kept some data which the teacher researchers provided with the materials that they'd used for teaching and for assessment, and I'm particularly looking at what they were doing with teaching reading and writing in the classroom. But the background to my interest in this is the ABS study, and I don't know if you're familiar with the Australian Language and Adult Literacy and Life Skills Survey, which was funded by the Australian Government and conducted in 2006. This was part of an international study conducted in a number of countries, but in Australia it was conducted with specific kind of adjustments to the local kind of local conditions and the way that language and literacy is used in the community of Australia. So it was designed to identify and measure the literacy which can be linked to the socio and economic characteristics of people across and within the country. So it was tailored to be used in Australia, but a comparison was made with the results of the Australian survey with results in other countries. And I'm not going to go too much into that survey results with other comparisons because I'm much more interested in some of the local issues. So the things that they were measuring were prose literacy, which is the ability to understand and use information for different kinds of narrative texts. And you're familiar with all this, you know, newspapers, magazines, brochures, all those kind of written texts that are kind of narrative or informational in style. Document literacy, which is a featured part of our curriculum, which is using the knowledge and skills to locate information in different kinds of formatted text. So it's not set out in prose, it's set out in tables and charts, and it comes quite often in the workplace as forms and schedules, maps, tables and charts. But these are very prevalent in the day-to-day use of the community as well. It's not only in the workplace. We all know about the train timetables and even the institutional schedules that you could hand out to your students. The survey also measured numeracy, and they measured something that they called health literacy, which they didn't create an additional set for or an assessment for, but they actually drew on the data for the document and prose literacy to see what kind of results they got about health literacy, and that was about information about preventative and curative health, what people knew about diet and preventative measures and commonly occurring diseases and how they managed. Now, Now, in this survey, there was they have a scale from 1 to 5, 1 being the lowest, 5 being a very highly literate kind of level. And in fact, they, in the end, they said 4 and 5 were fairly close, so they actually did aggregate the results in those categories. But they said that level 3 is the minimum required for individuals to meet the complex demands of everyday life and work in the emerging knowledge-based community. So they're saying that level 3 is really the benchmark. Below that, and you're below the literacy level needed to operate on a day-to-day basis in the community. So I'm getting to the point, which is that the results showed that for the general population, 54% of people had achieved level 3, the minimum standard in document literacy, and prose literacy was 53%. For people whose first language is not English, the results are a bit different. They're 36% for prose literacy and 38% for document literacy. So this was 2006, it's only a couple of years ago. So I'd actually like to get your reaction to those things. Does anyone want to comment? And as you know, when they produce these reports, they also provide a little bit of a summary and commentary on these figures. And this is the commentary they had about the people for whose first language was not literacy. Compared to 1996, the people who migrated to Australia in the 5 years prior to the survey, whose first language was not English, there was a statistically significant increase in the proportion of people attaining literacy skills of level 3 or above on the Tasman scale. So that was the commentary, that this was seen as a great improvement because it was an improvement on the previous survey. So this was seen as positive. I don't know about you, but I thought it was, I'm trying to get away from the TV. I thought it was a pretty disgraceful set of affairs, really. These are not newly arrived migrants. These are, and I have to say, these are aggregated figures. This is, can I bring something up to you? That's it. These are aggregated figures. So there are breakdowns of age groups, people who are in years of arrival in Australia, up to 5 years, 5 to 10 years, 10 years plus, people who are employed or unemployed, and people in different age groups. But even so, for both populations, they're an aggregated figure for both. So I actually looked at that and thought, well, what are we doing here? You know, why aren't people able to achieve or given the opportunity to achieve the levels of literacy that are deemed to be the minimum level required for operating on a day-to-day living in the community? This year, there was another research report. This one was conducted by the NCBL, which you know is the National, I forgot what the C means, Centre for Vocational Education. Adult Literacy and Numeracy. And this report, they had actually were responding to that original AWLS survey, and they wanted to do a review of all the research that had been done in Australia on literacy provision and practice over the last number of years. And to make some recommendations about future directions for literacy, provision of literacy in the community. And as Perkins says, it's hard to ignore the correlation between low levels of literacy and numeracy and socialisation, isolation, unemployment, lack of qualifications, low wages and poor health. And it's also hard to ignore the evidence that low literacy and numeracy skills have a measurable impact on local communities, organisations, industry sectors, and at a national level, or that effective interventions can have diverse positive outcomes. And she also said that
in this current climate of 2009, as Australia seeks to better define its desired future, a perfect opportunity exists for literacy and numeracy to be seen as an integral part of the drive towards social inclusion, increased workplace skills, and improved productivity. So, for me, that means that those figures that the AWLS survey revealed to us means that we are actually denying people opportunities and confining people to this limited opportunities perhaps in workplace and productivity, not enabling them to take their place in the community in ways that they would like to. So going back to our student group, and I thought about the students and wondered about what were the literacy skills that the students in our MEP programs were bringing with them into Australia. Another thing we've noticed when we're talking to the students is how many of them had said that they had learned English before they came to Australia. This is a subset of our student population in our study, and I need to explain these figures a little bit because I don't want to mislead you with some of the percentages and figures. As Linda mentioned, we started off with 152, and over time, with the natural attrition rate, we ended up with a few fewer than that, about 130 odd participants. I actually looked at the number that who had learned English prior, who said that they had either learned English or not learned English before they came to Australia. And I was trying to look at the group who had actually commented, because in these interviews, which were semi-structured, which might have varied from student to student, from interview to interview, some questions were asked very directly, some strict questions were not. Some students wanted to respond and discuss these questions, and some of them wanted to move on to something else. So we didn't really have consistent answers to the question of, did you learn English? What do you think about your literacy? But we did get enough of a response to get a trend, I suppose, towards what their experience has been. So out of the participant group, we had 75% of the group said that they had learned English prior to coming to Australia. 7% said no, and 18% either didn't respond to the question or didn't understand the question, or something happened at that point that we actually didn't get a direct response. So from now on, the figures I'm talking about are 113 plus the 7, those who actually gave us an answer about their previous language learning. But it seemed to me that 113 was quite a good proportion of the group that we had that said that they had learned English prior to coming to Australia. And the question to me is, what does it mean for the literacy skills? If they have learned English before they come here, what skills are they bringing with them that we can build on? So we also asked them where they had learned English, and as you can see, the greater proportion had learned English in a formal setting, either as part of their schooling, and for some it started in primary school, for others it started in secondary school. But of those who started at secondary, some also continued on to university level and continued their study of English at university level. Does that surprise you that they may have gone that far? No. Okay. You have more experience than I do. A very small number of our sample said that they had learned informally, and I think that goes to their experience prior to coming to Australia. Some have not had the opportunities for education and therefore had learned English informally just through interaction, the way you were talking about. And those who spoke about learning English simply in formal ways often did not learn to read and write in English. It was simply spoken interaction, speaking in the skills that they had developed. Those who had learned English through English medium education, either at university or in their secondary schooling, did not seem to be more advanced than those who had learned it through schooling, yet in the same class as them in the same level. So there's not much between those. So just to show you how representative this group is in our samples of the students, I think Linda already mentioned that the majority of our students group were in the 25 to the 44 age group, and that kind of correlates with this group who talked about the learning age trying to come to Australia. So most of those who had learned English were either in the 25 to 34 group, a smaller number, 35 to 44, far fewer in the 16 to 24 age group, and far fewer in the upper age levels. And where did they end up in their class in the AEP when they came in? 54% were in a Sigma 3 level, which you would expect if they had learned English prior to coming to Australia. That gets picked up in your assessment processes, and it means that they have actually more advanced than those who have not learned it through formal schooling. It may look as though level 1, Sigma 1, more learners achieved, had previous English language learning than level 2, but remember that we had more students at SISWE 1 level in our family. So really it's quite proportionate, but it's not done. It doesn't mean that they're more level 1. But still there's quite a substantial number, 23%. It's not a small proportion really. Who had learned English before coming to Australia and then went into a level 1 class. But the interesting thing that I thought about the SISWE 3 level is that these are the ones who are saying, who recognised or felt very much that their English was not adequate. They did not feel that they were competent users of English. They did not discuss literacy to the extent that they talked about their speaking and listening skills. And I think Linda has covered the speaking and listening adequately, so I won't go into that. But there did seem to be a sense when they talked about their previous language learning that it hadn't quite equipped them for what they needed to use English for here. So what did they say? This is an aggregation of the kinds of comments, because I don't think you need numbers actually associated with this, but what they said about formal learning was they found that in schooling they were not quite disparaging, but they were a little dismissive of the language learning they'd had before they came to Australia. They said that the English language, our instruction were very limited, and as you can imagine, it's probably 1 or 2 hours a week, in some cases up to about 5 or 6 hours a week. English is learned as a subject. It's not learned, they're not learned as a communication, a means of communication. So they learned English as a subject. It's treated that way in their schooling, and it's timetabled in that way for the same reason. So you don't get any more hours for learning English than you would for perhaps history or geography, or you probably get more for science maybe. What was the curriculum like? What did they actually learn about? And they said it was a very academically driven curriculum, not communicative. There was not a sense that we're learning a tool for communication. This was simply a subject. We were learning facts, we were learning vocabulary, we were learning alphabet, we were learning facts and figures, that we were not actually learning how to use a means of communication. A lot of written grammar exercises, a strong focus on test efforts. This was the motivation for those to do it. Those quite often they said that it was very demotivating, that they were totally uninterested, that they referred to themselves as bad students. And when they were asked why they thought they were bad students, they just said, look, I just wasn't interested. But then quite often they went to say, well, the teacher wasn't interested either. And the teacher wasn't interested because the school wasn't interested. And the government mandated this in the curriculum, but the government wasn't interested enough to make sure that we had a decent curriculum. So they kind of, you know, started off saying, well, yes, I was a bad student, but then they sort of think, well, you know, it's not all my fault, and it's not all the teacher's fault. So there's kind of that understanding that it needed a much broader policy kind of environment to make a change in that area. Test-driven. So this is how you motivate your students. You give them a test. If you want to. If you want to ring a bell, if you know. Okay. And those who learned informally said that they found that their experience with English was mostly self-directed. They had learned English because they wanted to. But they actually actively said, I knew that I needed to learn English, or I wanted to learn English. I looked for opportunities where I could hear people talking and I look for opportunities when I can engage with them. And it might have started off with me saying hello to tourists in the street, and then I might try to engage with them going a little bit further. But this was their means. But of course, it did not lead to the development of literacy skills. And also, they said their conversations tend to be the same after a while. When you said hello to one tourist, you said hello to all of them, and there's not much. Plot development, I suppose, in the conversation. And this group I actually did count, and so I said to them, well, what did you learn? Gathering from the data, what did they learn? And they said that what they generally felt they had learned quite well was the foundation skills. They had learned how to write in English, handwriting, how to form the letters. They had learned alphabet, number, and they did things like, red, blue, green, cat and dog. That was kind of the vocabulary development they had. And they were tested on that, and they were particularly tested on spelling of these other things. Mm-hmm. So that was for all of them, the experience of men learning regardless of when they started. And it didn't seem to get very much better as they progressed, because of course with an hour a week or 2 hours a week, you're not going to build up a huge bank of language skills. So except that when they got to more senior secondary and perhaps tertiary level, they did start to get more kinds of text to read, short paragraphs to read. But then again, it wasn't really reading for information. It was very much academic, clinical kind of testing. It wasn't really asking referential questions. It was really just factual questions. Two people said that they had actually taught themselves to read English. One of them needed to learn English for his profession, and he found that particularly he needed to read English texts, and that was the same for the academic. She needed to learn, she needed to read scientific texts that had been published in English, and so she taught herself to read these. She hadn't learned any other English. She didn't aim at that stage to learn to speak English because she didn't need to. What she needed to do was access the literature, the scientific literature related to her field. And this was fairly typical of the experience of a number of students who talked about tests. I still remember clearly during that time the teacher was so strict, they asked all the students to memorise 50 vocabulary items every day. 50, said the interviewer. In English? Yes, in English. English every morning. So, got to get up early in the morning and to learn to memorise spelling. And did you remember them every day? Yeah, I did. But the effect is not that good. So we learned so hard was because we have tests every day, the spelling tests every day. Yeah, but it's because we don't use it after the test that we forget. So he was saying, I was tested every day, I learned a lot. Every day I had to learn 50 pieces of vocabulary, I don't remember any of it. Because as soon as that test was done, I was on to learning the next set of items and remembering those for the next test. None of it. Retained. And quite a few people said that there was quick movement. There was not much in of the revision or recycling of concepts that we're familiar with here. So I might leave that question till later, but the question I was going to ask you is, how do we utilise the skills that they have gained, their very basic literacy skills? How do we build on these for teaching literacy in Australia? Now, this was drawn from what they told us about their use of reading and writing, and this is the range of the kinds of texts that they'd engaged with, that they told us that they engaged with throughout this project. So under the document, I think you'll see some fairly sophisticated kinds of documents that they're being required to read. And of course they are everyday members of the community. They get the same range of texts delivered to them that we get. And they have the same requirement to read, understand and respond to them that we have. Prose, they tended to have a bit more self-selection, and they were able to choose things that they wanted to read, like books, literary texts. Somebody said he was not a good reader, I think he was. Very, very basic, and he didn't learn very much. He said, but occasionally we did books. And I said, what did you read? Gulliver's Travels, Shakespeare. So someone who thought he wasn't very literate, he actually managed to do quite well. Quite a few of them like to read religious texts. They're very involved in their community in religious groups, and they read the religious texts that are provided by those groups. And they're usually in English. There doesn't seem to be very much interest, despite some of these being highly multicultural groups, very multicultural the groups of people and communities in areas of Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth, everywhere, that has a high migrant population. But they didn't seem to need to translate, and so they're getting this reading opportunity, I suppose. And professional books, some of them needed to read professional texts related to the field they were working in or intended to work in, and a lot of them referred to having to write letters to make complaints or to get something done. Writing a letter to your real estate agent, telling them about some problems you have. You can do it verbally, but if you don't have that written piece of paper saying that you sent the information on this date, they tend not to respond to it, I was told. Websites were used very, very widely among that student population. A number of the women who were pregnant said that they had gone to the websites that provide a lot of information about baby care and childbirth, and particularly those who didn't have family in Australia that could give us information about the processes here. They relied quite heavily on these websites. Job seeking advertisements, health information, trading, banking and financial, and newspaper sites. Quite a few people said that they looked at newspaper sites, both Australian newspapers, BBC websites, and also in their own country as well. They also used a lot of digital communications. Email was cited by a number of people, not all of the students, but I would say a big proportion of those who said that they had engaged in reading and writing did use email, chat, social networking, blogs, in the workplace data entry programs, and specific programs that were designed for their particular workplace activities, and financial transactions. So this is kind of the broad range of reading and writing transactions, I suppose, and interactions that they need to engage within the community. So looking at those, we wondered what's the fit with the ANUP? What do we teach in the ANUP? And we looked through all the data that we collected from teachers about what they had taught over the period of the project, and looked at the range of reading and writing texts that they had used in the classroom. And there was quite a range, because as you probably, most of you would know, that the curriculum is very wide-ranging in terms of the kinds of written texts that learners can choose from. So formal letters, writing reports, formatted texts, reading narratives, reading newspaper articles, writing formal letters, writing recounts. Across all the levels, all these kinds of texts were used. And in relation to, and I don't want to preempt too much of Alan's session when he talks about the topic content, but these are the kinds of contexts that in which those literacies were taught in the classroom. So obviously they came, or it seemed to me obvious, that they were coming out of the interests and or the lives of this class group at the time. And I think they do reflect also, to a degree, quite a degree, the kinds of things that learners in the ALLS survey were assessed on. Not that any of the survey respondents. So, did they want to learn to read? When they came in to the ANEP in the initial survey, there was a lot of emphasis on the need to learn to listen and speak, and they felt that reading, well, it didn't appear to be, from these surveys, it didn't appear to be a priority. And there was two reasons that seemed to come through for that, one being that listening and speaking is immediate. If someone speaks to you, or you need to speak to someone about something, it's immediate. You've got to produce immediately the language, and you've got to respond immediately to the language. reading and writing you can take home. As somebody said, you can take it home and look up your dictionary, and you can spend time over a written text to try to understand the meaning. Maybe consult with other people. You can use a few strategies so that you don't have to respond to them immediately. But that doesn't mean to say that it's not as pressing a need, I think. Much of the information that comes to people new to the community is through the written word. So there is, I think, a bit of pressure for them to be able to read and understand those. This learning is
making information on the phone.
This is a student who had taught herself English informally. She was a hairdresser. She had gone to the United States and worked as a hairdresser there. She didn't have any instruction in English. She learned on the job, she said. She just communicated with the clients. With a lot of gesture and body language initially, but gradually she built up a little bit of communication kind of language. But she said she never learned to read and write. And when she, after she migrated here, she felt there was a need. She needed to learn to read and write, so that's why she came to the class. This student had been here longer. He'd been here a few years, and I'd asked him in this interview, had he ever had any experiences that disappointed him with using English? And for him, it was related to his limited skills in reading and writing.
Do you remember any times that it was really a problem with your English wasn't
good? Yeah, the problem with was this point, like when go out to find a job, you know, mm-hmm. and a person asks if then you need a reading, writing, or yeah. communication skills, then not knowing English, that was hard, so we didn't have those skills, so yeah. wasn't getting any jobs, so was getting rejected.
Yes. And he also came to the class because he needed to improve his reading and writing skills. His family is having quite a negative effect on his life when he couldn't read and write.
I realize I can't just do labor work or can't just keep doing what I'm doing. I need to do improve my English more, grammar and everything, written writing, because I make mistakes in grammar, in reading, writing, spelling is in that. So I want to improve more so I can go for better jobs. So I don't have to do labor work all my life.
When he first came to Australia, he did find work fairly quickly. He found work as a farm labourer, and later he found work when he moved into the city, he found work in factories. But he's talking about a lifestyle choice here. He's saying that, you know, he could keep on working in those jobs where he didn't need to be as literate, but he doesn't want to be forever in those jobs. He has goals and ambitions for himself, and therefore he saw that reading and writing was going to be the key to that. And the success story for him is that he did come to an AVP program where he developed his reading and writing skills to the point where he could engage in a vocational skills course, and he completed a certificate 4-level course in real estate, which allowed him to get a license, and now he's fully qualified to work in the field that he wants to. But as he points out, it's a very literacy intensive job, and he's he really needed to have those skills. I won't go on about the others a bit more, except maybe this one, who was also, was he working, or was he work experience in the hairdressing salon? Was he working in a hairdressing salon or work experience? But he was talking about he was studying hairdressing, and he had talked about being called on by the teacher to give responses and answers to questions about the hairdressing, and he was feeling really confident and pleased that he was able to answer the questions, A, because he had the knowledge, and B, because he had the speaking language skills that he could actually make himself understood quite well, and the teacher was very pleased with him. However, then he came to exams, and exams require a written test, and he was really worried about this. He said, I was really, really stressful time, you know, and I asked the colour cutting teacher, I said, you know, when I'm reading a textbook, they're very big, and I said, when I'm talking with you, with my classmates, with the people, it's a different language. When I'm reading the books, in the book they use very, very difficult words. It's not necessary for conversation. You know, I'm scared about that. Like, I think I can't pass my exam. So he's saying that he can perform quite adequately in the job, in the classroom, but when it comes to the academic work, writing a type test, he was really concerned about the vocabulary level and the language level required for that. That also had a happy ending. His TAFE teachers arranged to talk to him about alternative means of doing the assessment, and he did pass. And another one also commented in terms of literacy about the contract, which is once you write something down, it's permanent, you can't take it back once it's written down. So he said, I feel that I really have to be very, very careful about writing well, because once I've written it, it's something that's on record, people can keep that for a very long time. If you're putting on a paper, it's something that you say, and I send the paper, and it's something that you have to keep all the time. And that's the importance, I think. It is better to write well. So these insights about the role of reading in the community and the role of writing in the community was becoming quite evident with level three, these students, was probably further along the track than they were than when they were first just developing those basic foundational skills. So I'm going to go back a bit to what Perkins said about what our role is going to be with literacy in the future. And she talked about lifelong literacy learning. We should be talking about literacy learning. It's not just a one-off course, and it's not just for the marginalised people, not just for the unemployed, the low educated. Literacy is for everyone, and it's lifelong. And so our question that we might talk about later in the day is, how does the AMEP equip the learners for lifelong literacy learning? And are these learners at risk for future social isolation, unemployment, lack of qualifications, low wages and poor health because of limited literacy? Or can we do something in the early stages to give them a better start so they don't appear in those survey statistics as another marginalised group? Thank you. I'm sorry I put you a little late for lunch.